A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Any of you who have visited my office will have seen this figurine. It's of Merlin, that ancient wizard of Arthurian legend. In his acclaimed account of the life of King Arthur, the once and future king, T.H. White imagines Merlin as someone who experiences time backwards. Merlin knows the future. He's already lived it. This is why he's the ideal mentor for the king-to-be. Merlin was an inspiration for me during my time as chairman. His presence kept me focused on my vision. After all, he already knew that we would achieve it together. Jean-Pierre Blaise, June 16th, 2017. What's good, Internet? You're listening to episode 126 of The Syrupcast. We're recording this week's episode on Friday, June 23rd. The Syrupcast is a podcast devoted to fostering intelligent and fun discussion on anything and everything related to Canadian tech and the Canadian telecom ecosystem. On this week's podcast, I'm joined by Mobile Syrup publisher and owner Ian Hardy. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you, Igor. That was a great introduction. Thank you.
Thank you. We have senior Mobile Syrup reporter, Rose Bihar.
Hello. That almost made me tear up. I looked over at our guest and I was like, wow, that was a moment.
Last but certainly not least, I'm honored to welcome to the show Christine Dobby. Christine is someone that needs no introduction if you regularly follow any news related to Canada's telecom ecosystem. As a writer for the Globe and Mail, Christine covers every major telecom related announcement. She recently wrote an in-depth feature on Guy Lawrence, former CEO of Rogers, of course, which goes into some of the power politics that causes downfall. If you haven't already, you should check it out. Christine, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Well, thanks for having me. It's really exciting to be here.
And how are you today?
I'm good, despite the disgusting humidity outside.
And endless rain.
Yes.
Okay, so if that quote from our good old friend Jean-Pierre didn't tip you off, the topic of today's podcast is the former commissioner. We invited Christine to the pod because we think, you know, of any individual out there, she's the best suited to help us look back and contextualize the past 5 years of the CRTC and his tenure there. So I guess the best question to start is, with recent, what happened recently, obviously this past last week, it broke as soon as we were going on last week's podcast, and that was the CRTC decided to ban locked smartphones and unlocking fees. So
big,
I guess,
news.
Big news, yeah. So Christine, overall, what did you think of that decision and especially the timing of it?
I thought it was really interesting, and obviously he wanted to go out with a bit of a bang, you know. Yeah. He wanted to wrap everything up, and it really was emblematic of his term in a way, in that, you know, he really sought to be this champion of consumers. Mm-hmm. And this was obviously a very consumer-friendly decision, and it was interesting. I was saying to my editors, I'm like, I love this because I can actually explain this easily.
Right. You know,
yeah. It doesn't involve like an MVNO acronym, and there's
the Wi-Fi first MVNO thing was so hard to explain.
Right. Yeah. There's no reselling of wholesale internet. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very simple to understand. You know, people own their device and they want to be able to take it wherever they want, and then the companies charge you an extra $50 to leave, and the CRTC is banning that. So it was a pretty, you know, simple, easy to understand thing. Made a lot of sense. I think it resonates with consumers
totally.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was kind of a perfect way to cap off mm-hmm. his term, in that, you know, it's great, but, you know, is it going to change the mm-hmm. the industry? Is it going to make it more competitive? That remains to be seen. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that was one thing that our readers were really debating in the comments, and it's a fair debate. Like, I don't think it's going to affect things very much for a lot of consumers because they're going to be waiting out their subsidy period for 2 years anyway.
Yeah.
But then once they're done that 2 years, they're free and off the hook in a way that previously they hadn't been.
Yep.
And I used to work retail a little bit and see people come in and say, okay, I'm done my contract. I'm just going to, you know, like swap over to this carrier or whatever. Do you have any retention deals? And then when we would tell them about the $50 fee, it might actually hinder them. So it was a slight hindrance.
Sure. Yeah.
And then you know, so maybe it will spark a little bit of change, but like you're saying, I'm not sure how much.
Right.
There's also the possibility that then the aftermarket for selling phones will be a lot more vibrant.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great. So you can give your kid a phone right. that you're not using anymore, mm-hmm. and they could put it on the discount carrier.
Right, that's mm-hmm. true.
You know, maybe once Freedom Mobile's network is a bit stronger and they're more of a threat to the carriers, you could see the lack of the unlocking yep. policy being more mm-hmm. beneficial.
Well, that was a really interesting, I was reading in your article, you were saying that Freedom Mobile didn't actually advocate for fully doing away with unlocking fees. Is that correct?
Right. And I have to admit, I wasn't following the testimony at the wireless hearing yep. carefully. I might have been working on the Guy Lawrence piece. I'm not sure.
Yeah, totally.
For whatever reason, I might have also just been on holiday. But you know, they did say it was something that they... You know, they famously in the Canadian yeah, tech
yes,
world
so famously
called it toxic revenue. Mm-hmm. But I think they would have been happy to sort of phase it out in a different way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that they're going to be too upset with this decision.
No, I feel like it's a boon for them. I feel yeah. like that's something that's really going to be that will, you know, for places like Freedom in particular,
yeah.
do a little bit to gain some business. So
I think particularly once they actually have Apple and the iPhone working on their network, even if, you know, Apple isn't officially working with them yet, but once Apple works on the band of their LTE network, yeah. and the big three have customers who, you know, have unlocked devices, Freedom can just say, you know, hop on over to our network. It's not going to happen overnight. Apple hasn't made such a device yet, but that would be another, you know, another deterrent or non-deterrent to switching over.
Yeah. So you mentioned the toxic revenue quote, and at the end of the day, this is still revenue that they now, all the carriers have to make up for. Starting with you, Ian, do you see, is this kind of like a situation where we see, like it was with the move from 3-year to 2-year contracts, where consumers end up paying more out of pocket for these devices and for the plans?
I think the carriers only made like $37 million last year. Is that
yeah.
what the number
only
was?
Only 37.
Okay. Well, okay, so $37 million in a few billion dollars
exactly,
market.
Yeah.
Right?
It's actually a $22.5 billion market.
$22.5 yeah. billion. So $37 million from one little slice of the pie, it's not a lot, but it's still something. Mm-hmm. So where are they going to make that extra revenue up? They have to account for that.
That's a new house for Ed Rogers.
Probably will be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they have to make it up. So how are they going to make it up? They're going to have probably some sort of new fee of some sort, perhaps. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean... Like you said, it's not a huge amount in terms of relative. They're not going to be under huge pressure to make up that revenue. I think it was more useful to them to prevent people from switching mm-hmm. and keeping churn lower. But, you know, it's not the same as the switch from 3-year to 2-year contracts,
right.
where that was a much bigger amount that they needed to recoup over a certain period of time. And there's nothing to stop them from inflating prices, but it's going to be hard to tell whether... it's the regular inflation of prices or
yeah,
whether it's related to this fee, which not every consumer would pay, obviously. Like
right.
a lot of people would just
right.
stay with that carrier indefinitely.
Right. Mm-hmm. I feel like they had a stronger argument with the going from 3-year to 2-year plans to increase the prices as well. Because I remember when I was working, you know, you could say to the consumer, well, the added cost of the device has to go somewhere. And they'd be like, well, I guess that's true.
Right.
But now, like with the unlocking, that's not something that they ever had a very good reason for doing.
Right. I mean, they made these arguments about it was, you know, customer service rep time and
right.
there
yeah.
was this code that they needed to mm-hmm. get and everything. But mm-hmm. but I don't think anyone would say that that's worth $50.
Yeah.
So for everyday people, like people that are not us who cover this, who knows what unlocking is, do you think Canadians way west in Alberta or BC or up north, do they care about unlocking a phone? Is it something that... is on top of their mind? Do they care about a $50 charge?
I think when they go to switch, like Rose was saying, when they say I'm off contract and want to move, and there's that. It's just another unpleasant interaction with your with your telecom provider. It's probably a good thing for the industry to get rid of it. You know, they're so focused on trying to improve customer service that this seems like a pretty obvious thing when they're all forced to do it at once. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, I'm sure this isn't top of mind for a lot of people, but when you do have that experience, it's just one more thing that makes you hate your carrier.
Which is December 1st, right? Coming up?
December 1st, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were other changes too.
Mm-hmm. So that was the most recent, but I think it's fair to say that Jean-Pierre has been prolific during his career. So next I'd like to hear, you know, if we were to compile the greatest hits, as it were, of his tenure at the CRTC, what is the moment that stands out for you, starting with you, Rose?
I mean, there's a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think
I'll
just pick one, and I'll just say the decision on differential pricing just really made me proud to be a Canadian and to be in this, you know, Canadian wireless market. Because it's something that, you know, the U.S. is going the opposite direction on. Ajit Pai, the chairman of the FCC, definitely, he called net neutrality a mistake and even spoke at the Canadian Telecom Summit over video, just talking about his light touch attitude towards regulation. But I was really proud that our country would do something to make sure that net neutrality is important here and is enforced here. So with the new rules enforcing what can be differentially priced and what cannot be, and sort of very strictly saying that you know, you can't treat customers differently in many respects, and you can't treat companies differently in many respects.
Christine?
I was thinking back on this at sort of what was a defining moment for him, and I would actually go all the way back to sort of the beginning of his term. This was something that my colleague James Bradshaw and I wrote about in our profile of Blais last fall, when he the first Bell Astral hearing. So Bell was trying to acquire Astral Media, and the first hearing came up within like 100 days of him starting, and he came out with a bang, right? He sort of took on George Cope, the CEO of Bell, who I don't think was expecting the kind of treatment that he got at that hearing. You know, he brought up consumer concerns about it, and he pushed him to prove to the commission that this was good for consumers and for Canadians. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, this isn't a negotiation. This is, you have to prove this to us. And this is kind of one of the first times that he brought up this trio that he likes to refer to of Canadians in terms of three C's, consumers, creators, and citizens. So it's pretty high-minded, but he comes back to this time and time again. And then they ended up rejecting the deal. And this was a big surprise at the time. Bell was furious. You know, they made a lot of angry comments at the time. And they had to go back and rework it and agree to some divestitures. Mm-hmm. So why I think this is a defining moment is he's coming out with this sort of pro-Canadian consumer agenda. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it also set a tone for the relationship with industry, in particular Bell. You know, as probably most of your listeners know, the CRTC was kind of at odds with Bell for a lot of his term. There were several incidents, you know, the mobile TV decision. Yep. They overturned that they basically shut down Bell's product. Mm-hmm. Bell appealed that to the federal court. They lost. There was the fiber to the home ruling, which really disproportionately affects Bell because the third-party internet reseller market is really prevalent in Eastern Canada, and it's being phased in there first as well. So it doesn't affect TELUS as much. So this is really a kind of direct hit on Bell, and Bell took that to the cabinet. Lost. There's the Kevin Krull affair, which I could explain more, but I don't think I need to. And of course, there was the Super Bowl sub decision. Which, you know, and people in the industry, not even from Bell, will privately tell you that they thought that was pretty unfair to Bell. You know, it interrupted a commercial relationship, a contractual relationship with the NFL, and it was only one part of the SIM sub system. It wasn't an overhaul of the system as a whole. So anyways, I think that sort of the Bell Astral, if you go back to that, it kind of sets the tone for a lot of his term.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, there was plenty in there.
Sorry that, about that.
That was amazing because it just tells the scope of what he's done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For one particular company.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that relationship with Bell, it was the most tense with Bell, but it bled over into the others, and they all had to kind of decide how to manage him mm-hmm. in a way that they weren't used to.
Right. From Conrad von Finkelstein.
Yeah.
Who was a character?
He was, by most accounts, the industry saw him as more reasonable than Blay. Yeah.
I remember him at the telecom summit years and years ago, the last one. He goes, basically, I'm done. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Which was intense then, too. So I think my most memorable takeaway was the 3-year to two-year. Because Canadians, based on what we cover, Canadians for years wanted that. Because they saw the States. We want two-year contracts, lower subsidies. So it came to 3 years to 2 years. Everyone loved it. Prices increased, which was not good for the consumer at the end result. But that was my biggest takeaway for us,
right,
from what we cover.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when people look back at his tenure, do you think they'll look back at it positively, negatively, or somewhat with mixed feelings? And I guess I should clarify that. I guess certain people will look at it differently than other people. Yeah. Bell, I'm sure, was popping the champagne on June 16th, right? So, Rose, do you want to get us started again?
Yeah, I mean, I was at the regulatory blockbuster at the Canadian Telecom Summit this year, and it was interesting to see Bell, Telus, and Rogers executives all talk about Blay at the end, particularly, and say that the Greg O'Brien asked the question at the end, the moderator. He was like, so, you know, what were your last thoughts on Jean-Pierre Blay? And then nobody said anything. Yeah. And then I think it was, it was David Watt from Rogers who said, he certainly was prolific. And that was like, that was it. Nobody was going to say anything else.
They're not stupid. They know that they have to continue to deal with the regulator in general. And I don't think they don't want to look like they're celebrating somebody leaving.
And I did hear somebody else in the industry say that that the way that Blaze did things was unpleasant in their opinion. Like he did the right things, but the way that he did them was very abrasive or whatnot. But, you know, to my mind, I think it's rare to find somebody with that much passion in a government position, just sort of really feeling like it's their calling to change things. So in my mind, he was a great chairman, and so I'll remember him well.
If I can just, interlude quickly. It was always fascinating reading transcripts from hearings because he always had the... Like it was, he would be great on a podcast because he would just have all the hot takes. He would just jump at people, like, you know, ask them to prove themselves. And so it was always like what is normally a very dry thing to do is to read a transcript. They always made them entertaining for me anyway. So,
He had this very funny way. He said this quite a bit that he would say something that he clearly didn't like, and then he would just say, pity. Just sort of let it hang there. But he was entertaining to watch in the hearings for sure.
his outgoing message that he had on his last statement.
Yeah.
Did you read? There were so many hot takes on that. Mm-hmm. Like, I've done what I set out to do. Yeah. Canadians need to adapt. The industry needs to adapt.
I
won't apologize.
Yeah.
Which is really a different way to communicate things, especially from a regulator.
Mm-hmm. I think he's going to miss the limelight when he's gone.
He's probably going to go work at some law firm doing something.
Well, he's on leave from the federal government. He was an ADM, an assistant deputy minister.
Okay.
I think at the Treasury Board before he was appointed. So he actually technically can go back to a role of that level. Oh. And I think he only has a few more years before he's eligible for his pension. So.
Well.
He said he's taking the summer off and
setting off into the sunset.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to return to the question, looking back at his tenure, how will people look back at it?
Well, I mean, I think that for sure it'll be a mixed legacy. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael Geist wrote a blog post this week or last week about how Blay really put broadband at the center of what he did. And he made good strides in a number of areas. You know, the fiber to the home ruling, and he recently... or last fall, he cut the interim rates that the third-party resellers, tech savvies of the world, have to pay to Bell and Rogers. And that was a controversial move, and the big companies are pretty mad about it. But he did all these things to try and make broadband a real priority. The basic service obligation hearing was a pretty significant ruling. There are places, though, that he didn't go as far as people would have liked to see. Like, they didn't and it's not, this is sort of him as the head of the CRTC. You know, he wasn't the only one making these decisions, and there's a lot of staff input that goes into this. But, the CRTC didn't mandate MVNO access, which is sort of the parallel of what they've done on the wireline side. They didn't go that far on wireless. There's some places where he might have gone farther from that perspective. And then on the industry side, I think that, even people like Michael Geist would say he took things too personally, and he made public comments that were not really befitting somebody in that role. The yachts and helicopters comment, where he said CEOs come to these hearings, CEOs who own yachts and helicopters come to our hearings asking for handouts, kind of thing. Even if he thinks those kinds of things, to say those kinds of things publicly is really not appropriate when you're a regulator, and everyone who comes before you is supposed to be entitled to a fair hearing.
But showing some bias.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And there was obviously the Raj Shone issue as well. A really messy situation at the CRTC. And, Blay had been criticized by a federal court for his role in that.
Mm.
So, pluses and minuses.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely true.
I think he really did try to put consumers at the front of the CRTC, and even some in the industry would say that was a good thing, because there's a growing awareness that the industry needs to treat customers better. Yeah. I don't know that the average Canadian still feels like they, engage with the CRTC or even knows what they do.
Right. So, I mean, one of his parting comments was like, the CRTC is a institution that Canadians can now trust.
Right.
Does that ring true?
I don't think that most Canadians spend a lot of time thinking about the CRTC. If they do, they probably think, why can't I watch that US Netflix show, which isn't even what the CRTC does. I think they have a misguided idea of what the CRTC does.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, actually. I think, I know when I worked at telecoms, like, when we were talking about now their 2-year, not 3-year contracts, we would always generally say, well, and that's because the CRTC mandated that, or we can't do this because the government won't let us,
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So I think that consumers do appreciate being protected in that respect, because they know that the telecoms, or they have had experiences with telecoms that have been predatory in the past. Yeah. So they're looking for somebody to protect them. Mm-hmm. And if they're, the CRTC is mentioned, then they sort of grab onto that and say, well, I guess they're looking out for my interest. So I think maybe they know a little bit more about the CRTC than we might think.
Yeah, I think I think it has become more, it has a higher public profile than it might have a few years ago. And groups like Open Media and just Twitter in general help with those kinds of things. I think the major frustration Canadians have is cell phone and internet prices. And the CRTC doesn't actually regulate retail rates. And they're also hindered in a way because they don't have full control of telecom policy. They don't control spectrum. Industry Canada does. So they can't fully control the market.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that most people, when they see high cell phone prices, think, oh, why isn't the CRTC fixing this?
Mm-hmm. I think there's somewhat confusion about what the CRTC does, especially now with the CCTS here. because people want to complain. They don't know who to complain to. They get frustrated that they don't know where to go. Mm-hmm. Is it the CRTC? Is it this governing body by all the carriers?
Yeah.
Where do they go? So the other day I was reading some comments and someone said the CRTC shouldn't exist any longer. They should just abolish it.
Right, and those comments will often say, but we need more competition.
Yeah.
Totally.
So
And lower rates.
Right.
And cell phones are free.
Also, data is free.
Yeah.
So I guess moving forward, who do you think will replace Blay? And you know, where does the CRTC go from here? I think they have a lot of challenges ahead of them, especially now that when IC dropped this bomb that they want them to relook the Sugar Mobile decision. It seems like, you know, and I think the big three are probably now much like, they feel empowered now that he's gone. Now it feels like it's their chance to take back some of the ground they lost.
In terms of who might replace him, I mean, there was a name that was rumored was Kelly Gillis. She was an ADM, I think, at Industry Canada, or ISED. She also previously was in charge of Spectrum there, and she ran the 700 auction, which was incredibly complicated. But for whatever reason, I mean, the government has not appointed her at this point. It's still possible she might be. But that's the main name that I'd heard, that people had been talking about. And now we're, you know, we've got this four-month term with Judith LaRocque. And it's also heading into the summer. Not much gets done or decided in Ottawa. And it's a pretty, it's a tough job to fill. It's, you know, the government has started this open and transparent appointment process, and they're having trouble filling a lot of jobs, not just the CRTC jobs. I think they're looking for these ideal candidates that don't exist, and don't maybe want that job, you know. Right. It's what do you do after that job? You're conflicted out of a lot of other work. If you take on that job mid-career, say in your 40s or early 50s, mm-hmm. then you might be limiting what you can do afterwards. So for somebody who's really ambitious, perhaps in the public service, it might be kind of an end to a career.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny. I saw in your article, you said, or one of your previous articles about Jean-Pierre Blay, Judith LaRocque said that she wouldn't want the job.
Right. She told us that in the interview. Yeah. She's like, I mean, she's not taking it forever. And I think that... that she's officially, I think, retired, and if she stays for too long, she puts her own pension potentially at risk.
Oh, really?
Wow.
That might be, yeah.
I'm all for Canadian, for hiring Canadian. Does the CRTC role, the chairman have, or chairwoman, have to be employed by a Canadian, or can they outsource it from another country, import from another?
That's interesting. I'd never... consider that. I don't think that they would.
Yeah, because they need to speak French and English, obviously.
Yeah, so you got to speak French and English. You're probably not going to be from industry, even though there's some people who would argue maybe we need someone from an industry who knows it well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you probably, like, so it you almost...
The pool is so narrow.
It almost demands somebody from the public service.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, do they have telecom expertise or do they have broadcast expertise?
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's really not an easy job to fill. And I definitely get the sense the government doesn't want to fill this with a white male,
mm-hmm.
Who's towards the end of his career. So it's hard to find somebody who isn't that,
mm-hmm.
To fill the job.
So speaking, like, why not? Do you think Blay was just done with the job at this point? He didn't want to continue it? Because it seems, you know, the best case scenario in some situations would have been like, could you stay on longer while we conduct a more thorough search?
Right. Yeah, I think he might have had a sense that that the government wasn't going to reappoint him or extend mm-hmm. his term. You know, there were things like the Raj Shon stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it got to a point where it was sort of this public, weird, embarrassing thing for the Heritage Ministry. And mm-hmm. you know, Jolie had to fire Raj Shon twice, or didn't have to, but did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It became a pretty messy situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There was also, you know, he's made all these pretty dramatic public statements, mm-hmm. and some of them he's been critical of the government. Obviously, in his last speech, he was quite critical. He clearly knew he was going out at that point.
Yeah.
But even if you go back to the Talk Broadband hearing last April, he came in. Do you remember the second week of that hearing? He did this unusual thing where he started off with a speech, and he said, you know, we've all decided that broadband is vital. Let's stop talking about that. We need to figure out the solution. And he accused the government of not having a coherent strategy on broadband.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, he said some pretty contentious things about the government. So he might have had a sense that he wasn't going to get the job again. And he clearly made an effort to get through a bunch of major decisions before he left. So I think he felt like he'd wrapped up most of his work.
Got the last word.
Yeah.
It was almost like watching the end of the Obama administration again.
Yeah.
In this kind of like Canadian context, right?
Flurry of executive orders.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just... the one thing I did want to kind of provide for our readers is some context into, you know, why it's taking so long to fill some of these positions. Obviously, it's not just that we need a new head commissioner. We need also a commissioner in two territories, right? Ontario and then Manitoba. And you kind of alluded to it, but could you provide more context into why it's taken so long to fill some of these positions?
Sure. Yeah. So the Liberals brought in this new approach to government appointments. I think there's about 1,300 or 1,500 government appointees throughout the government who are named by cabinet, and so they wanted to make it open and transparent. And this, like I said, the process, it's they kind of have an idea of what their candidate should look like in mind, but that person might not exist. So there's actually a number of agencies across commissions and regulators across the government that have roles that need to be filled. There's been a lot of reporting on this by some of the political reporters in Ottawa about all these vacancies. And a lot of those vacancies are actually in bodies that are supposed to kind of keep an eye on the government itself, like the Ethics Commissioner and a number of, I can't remember all of the names off the top of my head, but it's a number of pretty key government watchdog roles. And then there's the CRGC, where they've been missing a vice chair of broadcast since November 2015. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, they have like, I think five or maybe six commissioners right now.
They're stretched thin.
Yeah. And they actually, you know, when they posted the job in January, they extended the deadline a couple times.
Wow.
Either they weren't getting enough applications or they weren't getting
the type that they
wanted.
Yeah.
Who approves the employment of those people, though?
So it would, for the CHC commissioner, or chairman and commissioners, it's the Heritage Minister, so Melanie Joly. But I understand that Navdeep Bains, who's Minister of Innovation, would possibly have some input in it as well. And then ultimately, I think cabinet has to approve it. I'm not sure that they have to, but it is a cabinet appointee role. Yeah.
So like, if we just have no appointed chair and just kind of a more of a stopgap measure with Judith LaRocque, how much do you think they'll be able to do over the next year? Like, what do you think? Because we do have, I mean, for instance, coming up in the next year is the decision on that Wi-Fi first sort of MVNO stuff. So
yeah, I mean, I think that's like the big one that the government basically just threw over to them again.
Right.
Yeah. Because other than that, they're working on some important things, like figuring out how to roll out that broadband fund.
Yep.
And they still need to finalize wholesale wireless rates and finalize the rates on wholesale internet as well.
Yep.
But yeah, so all of a sudden they have this MVNO thing. That's a big thing.
It's a big thing. It doesn't seem like they'll have enough time or people to consider it properly.
And I think that's something they'll have to have a public hearing on as well.
Right.
So yeah, and they only have a year to do it. It's going to be a crunch in CRTC time.
Yeah.
And there's also the 600 spectrum too.
Right.
Right, which is, that's under the control of ISED. Yeah. So CRTC has a pretty limited role in that. But yeah, there's stuff going on. Mm-hmm. It's also not the first time they've had an interim chair, like in between Conrad and JP. Mm-hmm. Leonard Katz was the interim chair for, I think, 6 months. So it's not unheard of. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean they're not going to function.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And things do slow down in the summer either way.
Right.
But it's not ideal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if you've been following the site this week, I put out a post where I asked our readers to submit some questions. We got
they were very excited.
They were very excited.
I have to clarify, I don't work for the CRTC.
Yeah. Like, who is this CRTC person?
Christine Dobby is the new head of the CRTC. You heard it here.
I'm not accountable for their decisions.
Okay. I guess I'll just read one. The question is, why do we allow for differential regional pricing on monthly cellular plans? For example, the cellular plans offered in Quebec and Manitoba were amongst the best and cheapest in Canada. 8 and 10 gigabyte plans for around $55 per month. If you're a regional provider, for example, Videotron, operating in a specific geographical region, then I can understand. But if you're a national telco, for example, one of the big three, operating across the country, your prices should be consistent for every Canadian so that all Canadians can benefit. Who wants to take a stab at this one? Obviously, not looking for like a super comprehensive answer because, you know, I think, as we said, most people assume that someone from the CRTC was coming to answer these questions. So we can't provide you those answers.
Well, Igor, Canada is very vast and diverse, and we like to...
Here he is.
That is the typical PR answer. Yeah. Canada's big. We have to have pricing that suits the regional carriers. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's such a fascinating idea. Like, it would be an interesting little singular rule that you could institute to change things, but I don't think it would ever fly. I mean, the idea is those plans are low because they have that fourth carrier option, mm-hmm. Videotron or SaskTel in Saskatchewan or MTS while it was more independent in Manitoba. But, you know, it's not possible without that competition to drive those prices down. I still think it's an interesting idea, but I guess it just would never make it past.
Yeah, like anyone. I said, the CRTC doesn't actually regulate rates. So what it's this regulatory word called forborne from regulating the rates. And they've said that they have never made a finding that the retail market is uncompetitive. However, in Blais's final speech, I think one of the most interesting things he said was that it may be that his successor,
right, yeah,
needs to take action, more interventionist action on the market,
yeah,
and may need to do something like regulate rates or mandate MVNO yep. access, because yeah, you don't see different rates unless there's a strong competitor in a region. Mm-hmm. So it really is a question of the market structure, which the CRTC is not fully responsible for. The government has a role to play in their spectrum policy. So, yeah, I mean, but regulating retail rates would be a huge, huge change to the market. Yeah. And it really might not end up in a place that people are happy with if, you know, if we have a fully... It's supposed to be right. a free market in Canada, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you have a fully regulated market, quality could go down. That's obviously the argument that carriers would make. So yeah, it's a frustrating issue for people, and maybe the MVNO thing would help promote more competition, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. could help even if the sort of top line prices for the carriers remain the same, there could be more options at a lower level.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the second question we had, and it was related to the decision that was made last week, while the device unlocking ruling is being heralded, testimony from carriers during the CRTC's hearings about the reasons for unlock fees didn't seem very coherent or vigorous. For example, labor, database upkeep. Is it possible the carriers sought to concede on unlock fees in return for favorable rulings on other topics? Now, this strikes me as a very hard thing to make a judgment on, just because, I mean, I feel like some of the reasoning is not really knowable in some sense, right? Like, they're keeping it pretty close to their chest. But what is your take on that?
I think, I mean, it is true that to lose the unlocking fee revenue is not the hugest hit that mm-hmm. they could take. But it, like Christine says, it's also true that the CRTC wasn't ready yet to really make any bigger steps towards things like regulating prices or regulating MVNOs. So I don't know that there was any sort of backhanded dealings or, like, you know, them taking a hit. And I think it may also be a situation where it's just kind of hard to justify unlocking fees.
And sometimes it's a strategy that the regulatory lawyers will take is to be reasonable on things where they see that they might lose. Mm-hmm. You know, if the writing's on the wall, you don't have to fight everything to the death.
Yeah.
That's just speculation on my part. But I don't see the CRTC as a place where you're sort of trading off decision for decision.
Yeah.
You know, Blaze also gone. There's no, you know, there's no promise that they'll get a favorable ruling on something else. I think that that's pretty unlikely, but they might just not have fought it too hard because they might have seen that it was inevitable.
All right. So on that note, so Christine, let me just, we have a tradition here, which is we do a shout out, which is, it can be anything from a podcast you're listening to a book or someone. So we'll get Rose and Ian to do theirs first so you can think of yours. Rose, do you want to start us off?
I guess what's top of my mind is this new 5G trial that TELUS and Huawei just did. Which is interesting because it is based off of 3GPP standards, and 3GPP is this industry standards group that is, for the global advancement of 5G technology. So it is very much more based off of the real standards of 5G than a lot of other 5G trials have been so far. And that is happening in Burnaby, BC. So they say that people in Vancouver and Burnaby may see 5G a little bit more quickly than others because they're doing all of their research there. And Huawei is also doing a lot of research in other parts of Canada as well, which I find interesting for a Chinese company to be really focusing its research on 5G here. Mm-hmm. But it just has a lot of the brightest minds here. So yeah, check that out. It's an article on the site.
Ian?
I'd like to shout out Betakit, our sister site, Betakit. Mm-hmm. They had, for those who are not familiar with Betakit is a site dedicated to innovation and startups in Canada. They had the Betakit 150 yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was a packed event, one-day event on innovation. Tons of speakers were there. It was a really, really great to see the community come together. So shout out to Douglas and Jessica, Megan, Amira, everyone who was
Mitra.
as part of Betakit. It was amazing to see that come together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a very telecom-related one, but
that's totally okay. Fine. Igor always does books.
I usually do Tim Hortons.
Yes.
Love it. An interesting development this week in the Canadian business world was Warren Buffett's fund investing in Home Capital. And some of my colleagues at the Globe and Mail actually got to interview him yesterday, which was pretty cool. So they had James Bradshaw and I think Andy Willis, who's a columnist for us, they were the ones who actually interviewed him. But they had a bunch of reporters in a room on speakerphone kind of listening in because Warren Buffett is I think, about 85 years old. So this might be a rare chance where you get to kind of speak with a legend of sorts.
Yeah.
So that was kind of an interesting, non-telecom development. But go read James's story. It's pretty interesting how Warren Buffett got tipped off to investing in Home Capital in Canada. It was actually an 82-year-old former banker from RBC sent him an email saying, you should check this out.
That's so cool.
And he did, and he invested a bunch of money in it. So it's an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My shout out goes to Rose. For my birthday, she got me Norwegian Wood by Murakami. I've been really enjoying it so far. And I haven't really taken to his previous books, but this one hits just the right spot. Where can everyone find you, Christine, on the internet?
My Twitter handle is pretty good. It's Christine Dobby.
And, that is pretty good.
Yeah, got in there early before all the Dobby Elf things popped up.
Yeah.
And email me at the cdobby at globeandmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just a reminder, she does not work for the CRTC.
Right. That's right. Don't ask for any regulations or anything like that.
Yeah. She won't be able to do it.
Yeah. Ian, where can people find you?
Sitting at my desk with the Tim Hortons at mobileserve.com.
That's true.
Rose, how about yourself?
Oh, I'm at Rose Bahar on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And you can also find Mobile Syrup at Mobile Syrup on Twitter and at Mobile Syrup on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And Mobile Syrup on YouTube as well.
Mm-hmm. Christine, thank you again so much for joining us. That was so illuminating. I felt like I learned so much. And please come back because we'd love to have another CRTC-focused podcast in the future.
Thanks. Yeah. It was great to chat with you guys. Thanks for having me.
And on that note, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.